Schwartz, the rabbi of Ohev Tzedek in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, will be speaking about experiences with single yeshiva graduates. And to my left, Ms. Sandra Gross will be speaking about effecting change and avoiding mistakes in shidduch dating. The program is as follows. It will begin with Rabbi Tendler speaking, and we will then have a short question and answer segment. Following that, Rabbi Schwartz will speak, and again, question and answer segment, and so forth. We ask that everyone keep their questions to a minimum in order to allow for the maximum number of questions. So without further ado, I'd like to present my Rebbe, Rabbi Moshe David Tendler.
Thank you, Shaya. Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe to make the Mishkan. The Medrash records Moshe's comment, "V'chayev shel asoso," is it possible to do all that you ask us to do? And Kodesh Baruch Hu answered, "Afilo echad mikem yochal asoso." Even one of you can do it. I couldn't believe there'd be one person, Rav Hananya, would be able to pull this off. Obviously, madness is not his sole possession. There are other Mishagoyim in the world. And a big Yashar Koach, a job well done. The first simon in Evan Ezem. Before I begin, I'll ask the young ladies here to please forgive me. My language is intended to be gender neutral, but my life is in the yeshiva, and possibly if I use a masculine phrase, you shouldn't think I'm trying to slight you. It's merely I'm out of practice since my daughter's left my home. The first Eben Ezra, Aleph Aleph, Chayev Kolodom Lisa Isha, Te Lifos Velirbos, Vecholmi Sheina Oseg Bepiri Verivyo, Kilo Shofer Domin, Omemayet Esadmus, Vegorom Lishrino, Shetestalek Miyisroel. And Ezra begins by telling you, you have no options. You must get married. Unfortunately, it's not taught that way in our curriculum. Children, I recall this past Shabbos, a little girl, not 3 years old, came running up to the bima where I sit, with a lollipop that someone had given her to ask me whether it's kosher or not. Can't read, doesn't have the slightest idea what kosher, not kosher is. She knows that she can only eat kosher. Getting married has to be taught in kindergarten. It's like eating kosher, it's living kosher, it's an absolute requirement. It's not your option not to get married and not to get married on time. Married on time, the Rama in Eben Ezra said, Bizman Azeh, he says, even though it says, Mitzvah Kol Yisrael Sheisa Isha Ben Shmon Esrei, and no later than 24, that's for boys. For girls, I understand 19 is over the hill already. The Gemara says, once upon a time, Kofin, and Yehuda says, Kofin means bemotos, not persuade him, you beat him with sticks until he marries. Certainly can't imagine anyone delaying, even though he says, I'm looking for a zivug that's better, it's nicer. Certainly no later than age 24. That's the halacha. That's the halacha by which we live. As we'll talk in a minute, you can't find the nicest pair of tefillin. You have to put on tefillin. You have to get married. You find the nicest you can. Nowadays, there are secular restraints, and Chazal took note of that. There are secular restraints, finances, etc., desire for career. These are all lame excuses. Man deyov, chaye yov, mezona, financial obligations are set by an individual, unfortunately, starting with where the parents left them. Young lady expects that the father worked for 35 years to buy a fine home and a nice car, that that's where she will start her life and that's where he will start his life. No, no. You start the life on the bottom. If you're zocher that the father gave you a trust fund and you're only working just so you won't get bored, but you really don't need the money, that's a different circumstance. But the fact that you have to work for a living, work hard for a living, yes. And I can be candid, a personal comment. When I got married, there was no support from either side of the family. We lived on Cannon Street in a sub-level apartment, one room with a sink and a bathroom. We bought two old bookcases and painted them to make it into, quote, two rooms. So we fenced off the so-called kitchen area. We paid $49 a month rent. And Baruch Hashem, we were able to raise 8 children and help each one to buy their home. There has to be some confidence in your ability to achieve the American dream as well. Key points: marriage is not an option but a duty. It must be taught early. There are many girls to date and many boys to date. And the attitude, when I finish the list, I'll then decide to get married, depends on how long a list you have. A list of 50 is too long. A list of 5 is just right. Surely you have to see other people. And we'll talk about that in a minute. How do you find a proper person? Well, there are metaphysical ways to do so. And I'll just use this to be able to give a little musa. If you look in the writings of Nachman Breslov Zatzal, he has much about finding a proper zivug. First suggestion in his writings is that you should say b'kavona shiras hayom, oz yoshe moshe, should be said with kavona. Where he got that idea, most likely, if you remember the story of the matruna who asked, what does God do now that creation is finished? And he was answered, yoshev m'zavig zivugim, said, I could do that also. And she tried to match up her servants, male and female, didn't work out. And the expression was, "V'kosher k'kriyas yamsuf." It's as hard, that's where the Oz Yosher most likely came in. "Kosher k'kriyas yamsuf," so you say Oz Yosher, then Kadosh Baruch Hu will split the sea for you too. I'll point out there's another one. The second I found there at the beginning of the month when you mekadesh the levona, that's when you should ask Kadosh Baruch Hu's help for a zivug. Why? Because, especially those here in the yeshiva, levona are the letters of besula nisas leyom harvi, the beginning of Masechet Ksubos that we're studying this year. Other suggestions: you should read the Parshas Hanesiim of bringing the Kabonos, because it says, "Uviyom Kalos Hamishkan." The Nesiim brought the Kabonoseim, and the Medrash in Shir Hashirim, "Biyom Simchas Libo, Biyom Chasunoso." Biyom Simchas Libo is the Beis Hamikdash, Beis Olamim. Biyom Chasunoso is Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan, and there Simchas Libo. Yom Chasunoso, that's the easy way to find the Shidduch. A little harder way is to ask someone whom you respect to say over a Dvar Torah, I assume now that there's a kollel in Stern College, it applies to them as well. Why? Because Sifsei Kohen Yishmu Das V'Torah Yilamdu Mipihu. So Kohen Yishmu Das spells Shatchan, and therefore hearing Torah is a way to guarantee your shidduch. I want to just use this just as a lead into what I want to say. You're all familiar with that Hahu Matruno. He taunted the Tanna, why, what does God do? God's on vacation, he all finished his creation. And he answered, Yoshi Mizavik Zavugim. There is another part to that medlash. Amar Abrachya. No, he didn't ever say anything about Zavugim. Never mentioned that, he said. Beloshon Zeh Hei Shiva. Rabbi Yossi Bachalafto answered her, not Yoshi Mizavik Zavugim, but Yoshe Beosa Sulamos. God is busy making ladders. Mashpil Lozer Umeirim Lozer. What does Abrachya mean to say? He doesn't make Zivugim. God makes a ladder. How high you climb is up to you. There's Yichus Atzmo that comes in that determines Zivugim. It's your choice. You want to succeed, then you succeed because you want to succeed. You won't succeed by reciting Oz Yashir. You won't succeed by more Kavona, Kiddush Levona. Only Kavona you have to have is to make sure it's the Levona and not a lamppost. There is no need to look for magical ways. Kodesh Baruch Hu made it possible for people to be married based upon their own merit. And merit means wanting to be married and not setting standards that are impossible to meet. We talk about some specifics. Shidduch is made first by physical attraction. You see a young lady, you see a young man, his appearance and dress and personality traits. Now, dress is a flag that you fly. A pirate puts up a skull and crossbones to say, I belong to that group. An American flag, Panamanian flag, tells you who you belong to. There's no doubt that dress determines your group. And therefore, dress is important, but not as important as people make it. Rigidity of mores, of customs, are not in keeping with a sense of priority, a sense of importance in your life. I would suggest, especially in the world as we live in today, the absolutes that have been set. I talk to the boys now, our boys, B'nai Torah. A young lady shows up. How long should the dress be? Below the knee, middle of the knee. I have Baruch Hashem three daughters and all about that. Or what we call soul length. Soul length is nafshi, my soul, ka'ofo, yeah, my soul should be like the earth. So I wear a denim skirt and I must step on the skirt because my feet shouldn't touch the earth. All that is personal style. And certainly, to show up at the first date wearing a baseball cap, turned backwards, of course, to show that the head isn't screwed on right. Those are extremes that set an example, which obviously the person wants to set an example, to say, I'm a maverick, I'm in rebellion. I'm not talking about that. But there are learned behavior patterns in dress, and people come from different areas. These are sociological phenomena. Lawrence is not Muncie, and Woodmere isn't Borough Park. And how a young lady or young man dresses doesn't mean that he's making or she's making necessarily a statement about personal piety or religiosity. Covering the hair, wearing slacks or pants, surely are halachic issues that ultimately have to be discussed. But I want you to know that on dating, at dating time, the opinions expressed during a date are usually not the opinion of the one expressing it. Usually it's mouthing something from the society in which they come. And we have now a need to evaluate what in medical ethics is called benefit burden. Young people grow up in families and communities. That's not who they are yet. There is much flexibility, there's much development that has to be. There are important decisions in lives. It is not dependent upon externals that are constantly under flux, under change. I can tell you in my community there are many women who don't cover their hair. There's the hebrews to kashrus, taras ha-mishpoche, Shabbos has no equal. How come they don't cover their hair? I don't know. But the concept of tinuk shenishba, someone who's caught in a social scene and doesn't know how to get out, does not apply to a child that was captured by goyim. It applies to someone who unfortunately got caught living in Scarsdale or Great Neck, and applies to people who just grew up in a social group, and all that is open to discussion. If you meet the right person and these issues are discussed and you realize that there is indeed halachic concern, then the benefit burden analysis says the benefit of getting a good shidduch, I can bear the burden of wearing a dress a little longer or a dress a little looser that doesn't fit like a glove. A dress should fit like a dress. These are issues in a year when every year, Baruch Hashem, we have Bali Tshuva coming into the fold. We expect that there will be a developmental phase that starts sometimes a little later than usual. And consequently, people shouldn't be drummed out of the army, declared, quote, unsuitable, untouchable, because of a behavior pattern that doesn't speak to the person, speaks rather to the society in which they grew up. It's important that boys and girls understand what the Torah says about a relationship, about a boy-girl relationship that becomes husband and wife. A lot of resistance to follow the halacha exactly comes from a kind of press campaign. Campaign even in the so-called language Jewish press, which constantly reiterates that the female in a marriage is a lesser person. I'd like to share with you a quick Dvar Torah on the beginning of Kedushin. I hope that will sum up and maybe correct much that I've heard from people speaking to me on the telephone on Shidduchim, feeling that they are not being treated properly by Yeshiva Bocher because he studied in Kedushin Kika Cheshisho. Kicho kicho, Mr. Yefron. Abraham bought a field, and I buy a wife. As you buy a field, so you give a wife some money, a ring, and you buy her. It's important to understand how little you understand about our Torah. That gives some confidence that in Mir Hashem, there comes a time when you fully understand. If you look in the Chumash, you realize that Abraham did not have to buy a field, didn't have to buy Moras HaMachpelah at all. Remember, Ephron or B'nai Ches were honored to give the field as a gift to Abraham. They refer to him as Nasi Elohim Ator Besochenu. They called him a Nasi Elohim. Ish Mimenu Lo Yichle Mikvor Meisecha. Take your choice. You have any place. Go take it. It's a gift. And Abraham answers, Lo Adoni. Right? And Afron answers, Lo Adoni. Right? Shiboni Hasoda Nosati Loch. And Abraham insists, No, Nosati Yesas. Kesef hasod kach mimeni. What's this strange dialogue? I give you a gift. No, I want you to buy. I want to buy it. Why should you want to buy it? I got it as a gift. Kicha kichem is the effort lets you know that you don't buy a wife because Avram never bought a field. Avram had the field. Avram put down money because money came from God, and God promised him in Bris Ben Absorim, Lizarach ha'ete in Asoretz hazos. And he wanted God to give him the field, not the Ephron. He wanted the beginning of the promise of Bris Ben Absorim to begin, the fulfillment should begin. And that's what the Kesef Kedushin is. It's not to buy a wife, it's to announce that this wife is part of my destiny. It's eternity. And because it's eternity, a size 8 is not the maximum size for a wife. Or nowadays, not size 8, but the look known as the anorexic concentration camp look. So when the girl stands sideways, she disappears. Those are not factors when you talk about a marriage forever. Yemir Hashem, her shape will change as yours will. Pregnancy and children. And the wife has to remain the same wife. That's part of Hareyat Mukadeshusli. Nobody else. Can't find another wife. I'm all finished. I stopped looking. Can't find another husband. And therefore, essentials are what you're looking for. Not that which is changeable, variable, that's nothing to pin your future on it. A key concern in Shidduchim is to be Balei Chesed. Is he a Bal Chesed? Is she a Bal Chesed? That's why many of these summer programs that involve care of the sick, your HASC program and so on, are wonderful places to meet people who are Bali Chesed. Nobody else would take a job diapering adults unless they're Bali Chesed. That's critical, because the stresses of marriage life are ameliorated by the Chesed that a husband shows to a wife, a wife to a husband. That is critical. Rav Shmuel of Chaim Shmulevitz Zatzal and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Amalov Rav Yehuda Bar Eloi, Shohayu Shisha Talmidim Miskasin Betalas Echod. 6 Talmidim shared one blanket. There was such poverty in his time, right? Vahoyoskim Batova. So Chaim Shmulevitz said in a highly candid personal comment, which is published, says, when I sleep with my wife the cold nights in Yerushalayim, the only way we stay covered is if I push the blanket to her and she pushes the blanket to me. If I pull the blanket to me and she to her, we stay cold all night. Shisha Talmidim discussing the talis echad. You know why? Because each one pushed the talis over to the next one. They were all Bali Chesed, therefore they could be Osig Vatorah in the great poverty of his time. Comment about family. Many aspects of family are critical in Shidduchim. Shulchan Aruch says that indeed, in looking for a Shidduch, you should pick someone who's the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. That's Beis Vav. Lo Motza Talmud Chacham Yisra Bas Gedoli Ador. teacher of the Gdoli Ador, not Tamidi Chachomim. Lo Moser Bas Gdoli Ador, Yisra Bas Roshi Knesios. As the president of a shul, he's not a Godol, he's not a Talmud Chachom. Lo Moser Bas Roshi Knesios, Yisra Bas Gaboi Tzoko, etc., etc. Comes to the Mor and makes an astute comment. He says, but an Amoritz you shouldn't take, but how do you find Amoritz? Amoritz is one she'ein l'medagdei b'mitzvos. Not how much Gemara he knows. Is he a halachic Jew? That's the key concern in Shiduchim. A halachic commitment. It's like Gerus. We don't teach a Ger much Torah. We ask him, do you want to join our army? If he says yes, accept the discipline of halacha, then we extend to him Kedushas Yisrael. That's all you can ask for on dating. Not little details that don't make any sense. I put together a list with the help of my wife of what people ask, since we often get calls. What don't you ask on a date, or don't you ask about a person? Does he wear shoelaces or loafers? Do they serve whole fish or gefilte fish on Shabbos? Because whole fish means their bones, isa borer. Okay? Are all tables covered with tablecloth? Who is his or her posek? Does he eat yoshan or not? Chol of Yisrael, of course. But the one that pleases me most is, does he carry a cup? That's a question asked by someone on a cup. Does he carry a cup? Means when he goes to the bathroom, he has to wash his hands. Does he carry a cup in his pocket? He won't use the faucet to wash his hands. Not if he's really frum. He'll insist upon a cup. But it deteriorates to that point in which people ask stupid questions. I had personally yesterday, someone called about one of our Talmidim. Does he get angry easily? Does he forgive easily? Someone learned something in Pirkei Avos. So how the heck am I supposed to know that? And with me, he doesn't get angry. Yet these questions are asked for what reason? Because nobody knows what to look for. What you're looking for, I'll sum up in a minute. Family, however, is important. We live in an age of Bali Tshuva. And Bali Tshuva come from families that don't have the Torah background that you people may have. The important thing to know is that the family is willing to present a halachic household to your children. It is extremely difficult to raise a child if you go to his grandparents or her grandparents' home and the Zayda sits without a yarmulke and sees things in the house that she's not allowed to eat or he's not allowed to eat, and it's there. That is a major, major deterrent to a shidduch. The fact that parents are not as learned, if they have a halachic commitment, then in this world, the way we are today, we thank God that we've been able to add to our diminished ranks by Bali Tshuva, and there must be great sensitivity to that reality of our life. My father-in-law Zatzal was asked, but after all, the children born from these Bali Tshuva were born when their mother did not go to mikveh. Is it not best to avoid taking a girl or a boy from a Bali Tshuva family where they became Bali Tshuva after the child was born? And my father-in-law answered the printed Tshuva. If they didn't go to mikveh, then the Gemara defines the personality of a child born as a ben nida or bas nida, as someone who is crude, uncouth, mannerless. Is that the girl you want to marry? Is that the boy you want to marry? Surely not. Then surely the mother went swimming that month and the child is perfectly kosher. That's the kind of tshuvas that you need in this world, the world in which we live. Are we doing on time? Is he here? What's he? Okay. Family does not include your teacher, Rosh Yeshiva. They are locus parenti. They act like parents, but they're not parents. Shidduchim should be discussed with parents, not with Rosh Yeshiva. Some of them have ulterior motives, like the daughter of a major donor, the son of a major donor. They don't know you that well, even though you've been with them for a year or two. That's parents' job. Advice given by Rosh Yeshiva about Shidduchim, etc., need not be honored the same way that you honor their Pshat and Tosus, how they teach a halacha. They may not be competent to advise in all areas of human concern. That's reserved for the Godel Hador, and sadly we don't have such a person today. A comment on family and genetics, a serious problem. What do you do? The Shulchan Aruch says, Lo Yisa Odom Isha Lo Mishpachas Mitzoroim Lo Mishpachas Nichvin. Ebenezer Bey Zion. Here, we are not obligated to seek medical advice from Rabbonim. There's no failure in Amunas Chazal if we realize that science, medicine has advanced, and that the science of the time is not the science that is accepted today. Science of their time. This was already repeated many times. Look at Rav Avon ben Arambam, the beginning of Ein Yaakov, or look at Rav Shchiroi Gon, Daf Samaches, in Gittin. He says, Chachameinu heim v'lo rofeinu, and therefore all issues that have to do with medicine of the family should be discussed with a family doctor. To me, the ideal is, once things seem to be moving in the right direction between a boy and girl, it's a good idea for the family doctors to be given permission to talk to each other. Let them reveal to each other. They know what professional confidence involves, what they should or should not say, what's essential to say, they'll say to each other. And if there is a problem, it's a problem that has to be faced right away. There are problems. Boy has a brother who's Down syndrome. It's a serious problem. It's not a genetic issue. It's a serious problem. Achamei Vesem Shana, if the parents aren't there, the boy will be your responsibility. What a wonderful time to do chesed. If the boy exists, you'll have a need to take care of him. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu put you on this earth, to be able to extend chesed to somebody else. How you evaluate a problem is key to whether it is a problem or not. These are not problems. What are problems? The girl is a diabetic, a juvenile diabetic. What do you do? Do you or do you not marry such a girl? Or does she fall into a class of the unmarriageables? Well, you know, today you can speak to a physician. You know that a well-managed diabetic, with good discipline, can live a long and happy life and have children, etc., etc. Sure, there are problems. But who has guarantees from Kodesh Baruch Hu? You say after going to the bathroom, say in the morning, Shaborabo Nakovim, Nakovim, Chalulim, Chalulim, Shimi Paseach Echad Mehem. I just had a fellow call me just as I was coming here. Father had a stroke. That's the Paseach Echad Mehem. One little capillary opened up in the brain. Or you saw same Echad Mehem, someone called up with cancer of the biliary duct. All stopped up. Life is over. You worry about a medical condition that has solutions, that girl, that boy stays in the ballpark, someone to be evaluated. Those are not critical things, strange as it may seem to you. Then a note. See, Rav Schwartz has a tight schedule tonight, he told me. All right. Issue of integrity, what to tell each other, is not so important as when to tell. When to tell means not the first date, maybe not the second date, but surely on the third date, if there is a problem, is a medical problem, that's the time to discuss it. There's a very interesting Kilas Yaakov, the stipler in Yevomis, in Simen Mem Dalet, about a boy who had one testicle removed, and questioned whether he should tell or not tell. And he says, no, you don't have to tell. Why? The doctors say that no problem with fertility, perfectly fertile with one testicle. Don't have to tell a person everything. I could understand that at a certain time in our social life, certain age. I can't understand it today when there's a greater openness between Hosan and Kala, and there's expectation that serious things will be shared. And therefore, again, what to tell and how to tell, there indeed you may need advice of a Rav who has some understanding of this thing. After getting the facts, problems must be shared at a certain point, but not until you see it's worthwhile sharing confidentiality with someone. You have to expose yourself. You only do that when you think that person is worth it. If he's worth to be married, then he's worth also to be trusted with certain confidences. Comments that I'd like to make on the dating game. I must admit I'm relatively, I guess, inexperienced. I never had occasion to date. I met my wife by accident, and then there was a system in the Lower East Side where you couldn't study at home because you had 9, 10 children in a 4-room apartment. So the local public library on East Broadway was where we went to study. And after a few times, we realized that she seems to be coming the same time I do, and I come the same time she does. And that's how the shidduch developed, even though there was objection from my family that her father didn't have any money. But Baruch Hashem, I married off 8 children. I know about dating. The dating game is a game. And no one reveals true personality until later. And therefore you have little opportunity to do more than a general impression that things are okay. Mutual interest, discussion of what you people did last summer, what you have planned to do as far as career in the future, the kind of education you had, those are proper topics for discussion which give a feel to the other person of who you are. But you don't know that, who they really are, most likely, till you bring your first child to the chuppah. By then you get to know her a little bit. This is the truth. This is really what it is. And when Kodesh Baruch Hu helps and you've chosen well, then indeed it all comes out well. Rav Hananya has protested on the shidduch rigidity. You must use a shatran, etc., etc. We have Baruch Hashem intelligent people. The fact is that shatranus today is the most convenient way to meet somebody, possibly almost the only way to meet somebody. But a shatran has only one shot to fire. The second is up to you. This rigid rules: one, you must go only with one boy or one girl at a time. Nonsense. Second, you go with one at a time. After the chasana, you go with that one at a time. The idea that after the first date you must call the shatran to give your opinion, and she must call the shatkan to give her opinion, and the shatkan then will call you or your parents. Where this developed and how you people allowed it to develop, I don't know. It's nonsense. You meet a young lady and you're pleased with the meeting. You say to her, I hope we can see you again. If she says no, it shows she has seichel, that's all. You're on your own after the first meeting. How you make the first meeting is difficult. Really difficult. The only way I can think of, you get people like Rav Hananya who have boys and girls come to a lecture. And I hope, Amir Shema, after this lecture, you people will socialize a little bit. There's much more that has to be said. I'm sure that Rav Schwartz will touch upon some of the topics too. I don't know if he's aware that there's such a thing as a single scene on the West Side. Let me conclude by reading something from a tshuva of my father-in-law. Yoredei Aleph Simen Sadek Aleph. Ein lishakem harbei. Don't be too smart. Ha'isher shemotzos chen b'mareha. She looks good to you. U'b'mishpachta. Family is adequate for you. Ushmuosa tovo. She has a good reputation. She shomeres das. Yesh lismoch v'lisa also. Then just marry her, betikva, with the hope. Shehi hamuzumenes lo min hashamayim. That's the bashert. Vein tzorech lifchon oso mitchila. Don't give her any tests, no b'chinas. V'gam shelo yoel, won't do any good anyway. Ki ein habchina zu klum. Because during dating time, it's not the real person you're talking to. That will come later. V'tomen tia im Hashem elokecha. Walk with simple faith with Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he'll surely help you find the right zivug.
Okay, so now what we're basically going to do is we're going to have a short question and answer session where Hananya is going to walk around with a microphone, and hopefully everyone will be able to keep their questions to a minimum. Rav Tamer will answer them, and then once that concludes, we'll call upon Rabbi Schwartz. First question. Anyone? Right over there.
Rabbi Tamer, you spoke about the importance that the parents' home should be halakhically observant. So what does that say for, let's say, a boy or a girl who themselves becomes a Baal Tshuva and the parents have not yet?
We live at a time when a parent's home is not the only educative force in a person's life. For better or for worse, the school has taken over. So as far as the girl's commitments are concerned, the boy's commitments are concerned, that comes from the education they have. The problem with the home is one that I said is a serious problem. When the home maintains its secular behavior, then you have a simple problem. Can you visit there? Can you come to them on a Shabbos and have the television playing? Are they prepared to cooperate? I have a couple in my community. He was a yeshiva many years. He's a resident at Albert Einstein. His father is not Jewish. When his father comes to visit Muncie, as they do, doesn't come to shul. He happens to be like a rocket scientist. He's way up there, very, very intelligent fellow. He comes to the house, he wears a yarmulke. Right. They do not visit his home on Shabbos. They'll come on a weekday. On a weekday, when the children walk in, he wears a yarmulke. He knows he can't interfere with the education of his grandchildren. If you have that kind of sensitivity, then the field is open. If the parents are rigid in their secularism, they are in rejection of Judaism, it's a very difficult shidduch and one which I would not recommend.
Hi, this is sort of what he said. It's about, if I'm being too nitpicky, then just tell me and, like, refuse to answer the question. But the thing that you said about Zadie not sitting there wearing a yarmulke. Now, I can understand about what you said about, like, during Kiddush or something, he should wear a yarmulke because that's just proper. But don't you think that perhaps it might be a little better for just while he's sitting around doing whatever to be himself, kind of, instead of possibly, I can't think of a better word, lying to the child? And also, wouldn't it be a wonderful opportunity for the children to learn how to love non-from Jews, because they see it in their sweet Zadie, and he doesn't do this, so, you know, so he's okay. So why not start there?
I didn't get the question.
I hope that made sense. Sorry.
Why does she ask? I didn't get the question. What does she ask? You hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
what
does
it? Yeah. The thing is that she wonders, wouldn't it be better if, you know, if the family is not from that, the grandfather should sit there with his yarmulke, and more important, just that the children, the grandchildren that grow up, they can have an ava for non-from people.
Yeah. Yeah. As you know, the job of parents is to brainwash their children. If your child was taken as a child to a Catholic home, they would be members of that religion and defend it strongly. Chinuch is not an opportunity for liberals, for a liberal education. Liberal education has to come while being trained that your religion is the only way. At the same time, there has to be some understanding on the part of parents for them to have sensitivity to people who are not as adherent to Torah law as we are. But certainly, the idea that children in their early maturation will have this mixed message, that's a serious deterrent to a proper education of a child.
Is the question, does the other person have a posek, or who the posek is?
Yeah.
Does it make a difference if one were to ask, not who is your posek, but rather...
Did I mention that? No, it's one of the things on my list of what people ask, who is his posek? They had the chutzpah to ask one of my grandchildren that question. Yeah. The answer, the proper answer to that is none of your damn business.
Can the rabbi please clarify the idea of Ben Nida and Bas Nida?
I didn't hear. What did he say? I don't know if this is a proper time to do that. Just that the Gemara says that there is some kind of defect in such an individual. And the point of Rabbi Feinstein's tshuva was, if the defect doesn't reveal itself in a personality flaw, then that comment should be disregarded.
Hi. What's your take on getting married at a certain age? There's a lot of pressure, especially on the feminine side, in certain communities to get married before a certain age. So what are your comments on that? What's your message?
The Shulchan Aruch says you should get married by the time you're 24. Right. This is a strong, positive recommendation. The goal is that you should still be able to play handball with your grandchild.
It's very different today, and you can't relate our environment to them, you know? So in a time where we educate first, then we get a job much later on in life.
All right. I know people who met each other in a co-ed camp when they were 15 years old. They've been engaged now for 7 years or 8 years. No. What you're saying essentially is what I commented on. You expect to continue where your parents left you. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Al kein yazov ish esover v'esim. You leave your parents behind and you start from the bottom, not to where they left you. They left you in Lawrence, they left you in Woodmere with a 10-room house and a swimming pool. No, you go to Cannon Street and live in a basement and get married.
Does it seem unfortunate to you that the library is not available anymore for our children to meet, and that our children are being brought up that they can't speak to each other before the Shadchan interferes?
No, the problem is they can't speak to each other because they don't see each other even. I mean, I come from Muncie. There, when they get married, after the chuppah, there's yichud. They have yichud in separate rooms now. one of the problems I hope people will pay attention to is how can boys and girls meet al taras hakodesh? I'm not talking about 14, 15 year olds. I'm talking about 21, 22, 23 year olds. There has to be an opportunity for them to meet. And remember, we live in an amoral world, a world in which human sexuality has been degraded. So we can expect, in order to get the Shvil HaZohav, in order to get the midpoint, you must have to lean over a little bit to the right in order to readjust. But truly, I can't imagine that a little ingenuity shouldn't work out that problem. I know how it used to be in our time. My children, we made 8 chasanis. We had singles at the wedding. Our weddings, men and women sat together. My father-in-law didn't know the aloha on that one. The singles were set up so that they had smaller tables. That was all intentional. We sat, I remember, 10 to a table, and the singles sat 6 to a table. And the idea was, and someone in the Hosn College sat and figured out, I think that this is good shadchanos to put these people together. You try your best to find opportunities, but to go ahead and take every opportunity and defang it, take away the possibility of boys and girls talking to each other, that has led to this present problem. How to resolve the problem, I can't imagine it too difficult if there's a will to sit and discuss it. And I think our yeshiva has a prime responsibility to help solve that problem.
Shkoyach, Rabbi. Thank you very much, Rav Tendler. Gives me now a great pleasure to call upon Rabbi Alan Schwartz.
I may express a small degree of trepidation upon following Rabbi Tendler. I'm sorry that I missed the first half hour or so of his presentation, and I apologize in advance if I repeat anything that he, in his great erudition and humor, has already spoken. But I would like to share some of my experiences overseeing approximately 3,000 different single members of the West Side community in the last 15 years. It's a very transient community. If you ask them where they'd like to be in a few years, the answer is probably not the West Side. Although more and more singles are getting married and staying on the West Side, even with the crazy rents. When you're used to paying $1,800 for a hole in the wall, when two people get to pay $1,800 for a hole in the wall, I guess it's a little easier. Be it as it may, I will try to stick to the regimen given me, which is to just speak an introductory message for a few moments and then leave the floor for questions. So I came up with a Ten Commandments of, I think there's a book by that name. I took no material from that book, but the Ten Commandments of dating as I have seen it on the West Side. One is always be willing to go out a second or even a third time. Too many times have I set up people and after the first date, without being able to tell me the reason why they won't go on a second date, either because I don't want to speak Lashon Hara, it's just me, I don't know what to say, but whatever it might be, I find that the reasons are not good enough, unless you're absolutely repulsed. I mean, what can I say? You're talking about a person who wants to throw bombs for a revolutionary movement, you don't want to go on a second date with that person. But unless you can really pinpoint what it is, I must tell you there are many happily married people today who simply did not hit it off on their first date. There are many happily married people today who tried to go out, they went out a few times and it didn't work out, they broke up for a year and they went out again and bang, it hit them. So please be more ready to go out on a second or third date. Second word of advice is what I call the cable TV syndrome on the West Side. There are just so many people. I remember doing a Purim shtick once about how people talk in the Kiddush room or in Shul, if you have ever seen 95th Street on a Friday night. New York Magazine wrote that it is the second hottest single spot in New York. They didn't say Jewish single spot. Single spot. It's Friday night on 95th Street. Now, a lot of people look from the outside and say, that's awful, that's terrible. But what I hope is that people actually have a little tachlis while they're standing out there. I recently did a wedding in Montreal where the two actually met there. The guy looked at her and said, you know, I want to meet that person right there. He was introduced to her. They had lunch the next afternoon. He did it all by himself. He didn't need a shatran. And at the wedding, they had the beautiful posters at the wedding. It said, introduce your children to OZ, the land where dreams come true. So that was very nice. And we have put a big poster of that in our own living room now. Anyway, you only need one. What I saw talking about the cable TV syndrome is where you're sitting there with a zapper and you have 876 channels to watch and you keep on pressing and pressing for the next one, the next one, the next one, wondering what better program is there than the one I'm actually concentrating on now. So just pick on one person. I dare say, I remember quoting the first few years I was at the shul. In Shul, I looked up at the women's section and I said, it's very likely, I feel, that there are any one of 50 women up there, pointing to about 300 at the time, that will make just about anyone down here happy. And I said, and I bet there are any one of 50 guys down here that would make any one of you up there happy. In other words, I'll talk about Bashert in a moment, you just need one. But while you're not concentrating so to a great extent over what else might be out there, just keep your mind open, be mavir al hamidos, and that next week, the Jewish week quoted that I said that the number was 300, that any one of 300 women in shul at any one time could make all the men downstairs happy. I didn't say 300. 50, I think, is a stretch in itself. But still, the point is, you only need one. So stop looking at what else is out there and what else might be better. Just find the one that makes you happy. Three is be realistic of what you are and what you deserve. There are many 38 to 42-year-old men in my shul who let go of wonderful women 15, 20 years ago because of tiny, silly little things, and they confide in me about it. And they look at these women now with three or four kids and they would love to go back to that 15 or 18 years ago and just pop themselves in the head and say, this shouldn't bother you, but it's too late. Four, this is a true story. About 7 years ago, there was a gentleman in my shul who used to keep a daily record. It's wonderful to do this on a weekly basis maybe, but a daily record, what he did for God and what he did for himself that day. And he likes to have a certain percentage between what he does for God and what he does for himself, his learning, his mitzvahs, etc. And he told me he has a problem. He just started dating, and he's spending a lot of time on the phone with this person, and he's spending a lot of time with her, etc., etc. And I guess you can see where this is turning. And he says, it's much more difficult for me to keep the ratio I'm used to keeping between myself and God. And I pounded my fist on my desk, I remember in my office, and I started screaming at him. And I said, what are you doing? You don't realize how good you have it. Every second you spend with this person on the phone, every second you spend courting this person, you put on the side that says Lashem. They're married now, Baruch Hashem. They have three kids. That is Lashem. You are doing God's holy work when you're courting. Five, don't rely too heavily on Bashert. I don't want to sound heretical here, but the fact is that you'll find an unattributed source in the Iturei Torah in Parshas Vayechi. I think I heard the story told about two different sources, but this one is actually told in the name of Moses Mendelssohn. Moses Mendelssohn was a very ugly person. He had a distorted face and he was hunchbacked and very short. That's a fact. He was married to the daughter of a philanthropist named Guggenheim. Her name was Frumit Guggenheim. And she, according to the story, was quite stately looking and much taller than he was. These are the facts. How they met may be up to legend, but this is what's written in the Sefer. He sits down next to her and he says, "Do you believe in Bashert?" She said, "Of course I believe in Bashert. It's in the Gemara. Abraham Yom Kod Mitziras Avlad, Bas Kol Yotzeis, Fumeris Bas Ploni, Laploni. We all believe in Bashert." So he said, "Well, let me tell you this. I was there when the voice came out and said, Bas Guggenheim, Le Moses Mendelssohn." And she said, "Come on now, what kind of line is that?" He goes, "Yes, yes, and I asked to see her. And you know what the angel said?" The angel said, "No, you don't want to see what she looks like." He goes, "Why not? Wouldn't you all like to see what your Bashert looks like?" He goes, "You don't want to see her because she's hunchbacked, she has a distorted face, and she's the ugliest thing on 2 feet." He goes, "Oh my goodness, what? That's terrible, that a woman should look like that? Please, God, do me a favor. Give me those features. I'll look like that. Just make her beautiful. Please, I beg of you." And she agreed to go out with him. The rest is history. In any event, the Gemara that talks about who you will marry also talks about what you'll do for a living, how you'll live out your life. These things, an angel called Laila holds up the fertilized egg and it says, Tipazu mate oleho, chachamo rasha, chachamo otipesh, gibor cholosh, just rasha tzaddik, that's in your hands. But the other things, that's determined back then because the chromosomes are already set. You know, there might be someone in this room who is gifted with the ability to play the violin better than anyone who has ever lived. But you know what the problem is? You don't even play violin because you never took one in your hand. But had you been given a violin when you were 2 years old, you would have, wow, you would have taken to it immediately. But you missed that calling. Hashem gives each and every one of us certain callings. Personally speaking, I once played piano on the Joe Franklin show at the age of 4. You've heard of Joe Franklin? I bet Rabbi Tendler has. Remember him? He is the oldest continually running show on television since 1948. He's on cable now. Anyway, so I appeared on his show in the 60s and I played piano and then I talked to him at his desk. It was a talk show. And I remember the conversation with my father afterwards. He said, "I have never seen anyone play piano like your son at this age. Do not give him piano lessons. Because if your son becomes a pianist, he will not be a Shomer Shabbos." Joe Franklin is Jewish, and he told my father, "You're an observant Jew. If your son plays piano to the extent that I believe he will be able to, he will not be a Sabbath observer. All the contests are on Friday night, all the concerts are on Friday night. Don't give him piano lessons." And I never got a lesson. My brother and sister got piano lessons. I played everything they played after they got their lessons. And to this day, I can play well enough. I think I once played at your house, Cyrus. I can play well enough just to entertain myself, maybe not anyone else. But did I miss a calling? I don't know. Was there a certain bashert about what I would do with the piano? Maybe, I don't know. Am I just as happy having not met that calling? Very possibly. What I'm trying to say is that we may miss our bashert. It's actually a taisvus. It's actually a Rishonim and Achronim discuss this according to the halacha that says that you're allowed to get engaged on Tisha B'Av. Shema yaktimenu acher, Barachamim, the Gemara concludes, lest someone else step in ahead of you and take her away. Who's going to do that? If she's my Bashert, how can someone else take her away? And if she's not my Bashert, he ought to. The Rambam asked this question about the Torah that said, if you just got engaged, then go home from war, lest you die at war and someone else marry her. But if it's your Bashert, who can marry her? She's for you. So anyway, the Aruch HaShulchan, and we see in the Ritva also before, the Aruch HaShulchan cites a number of Meforshim that say that this Shema Yaktimenu Acher is actually the father of this girl. Just imagine this thing. I'm a little older than my wife. So at the time of my birth, a heavenly voice came out and said, Bas Ploni LaPloni, it's already set aside for me. But what happens? This Ploni already has eight daughters, and he wants a son. So you know the Gemara in Brachos that says that a prayer within 40 days of conception can turn a daughter into a son. You've heard it, right? It actually was done once with Dina. There was a son turned into a daughter. Remember that? So what happens? My future father-in-law, thank you very much, prays for my wife to become a boy. Right? And I lost my Bashert. Chevra, Bashert is not exactly what it's all cracked up to be. The Rambam actually wrote a tshuva all about this. Don't rely too heavily on Basheret. You have to work, you have to have your own ishtadlis. I'm sure this is Dvarim Shel Tam and everyone can understand this. But I've heard too many people tell me after a first date, my mother always told me what my Basheret would be like, and he's nothing like that. Well, Chevra, let's not listen to that kind of advice. Work on it. Number six. About 7-8 years ago, I gave a drasha in Parshas Lech Lecha that when you're on a date, always do whatever you're doing for yourself, and if the other person is doing the same thing, do it for that person first. In other words, you're pouring a drink from the table into two cups. Pour for that cup first. Whatever it is that you're doing, open the door. Be courteous. After all, why are we paskin halacha like Lavan and not like Yaakov? Right? And the Mefarshim quote Lavan, Lo yaseh kein bimkomeinu lo seisa tzi'ira lifnei bechira, like in your place where you do put the tzi'ira before the bechira, right? The tzi'ira before the bechor. Lo yaseh kein bimkomeinu. I mean, the Mefarshim could have quoted from Benos Tzavchad in Yesh Nochlin, where we learn the same halacha that you're supposed to get married in order of age. We paskin like Lavan in this case because it's a simple courtesy. You don't get married when you have an older sibling at home who's not married without their permission. In any event, my drasha was on the pasuk Vayet Ohalo, that's spelled in the Masorah with a hey at the end instead of a vav. Rashi brings down the Medrash Rabbah that says that Avram always pitched Sarah's tent first. Be courteous. I say this not only to the men to the women, but the women to the men as well. That week, during the week, I got a letter from a person who Nebuch is not yet married. He moved to Israel, but he's still not yet married. It's a beautiful letter. I had the occasion to read this letter at the Knesset a few years ago. The letter said that every day at the end of every single Shmoneh Esrei, I pray for God to present me with my Basheret. Since hearing your words, I'm going to rephrase this prayer. God, there's a woman out there who's looking for her Basheret, and she is in pain just as much as I am looking for her. So God, please do me a favor. Present my Basheret with her Basheret. You see, it really means the same thing, obviously. But he's pointing it out from her perspective. Why did I read this at the Knesset? I just wanted to say, to be more, Israelis should stop being in such a rush and cutting off people on the highways. Just be a little more courteous and think of the other person first. Number seven, don't be afraid to meet in a way where you can observe someone and fall in love. I think I just heard that from Rabbi Tendler. I think there are excellent opportunities of things like this in summer camps, when you're working on programming together, or Color War, or Camp Hask, or Camp Simcha. I'm sorry? Oh, Simcha is separate now? My daughter went to Hask. There it wasn't, but... Okay, in any event, it's just... Shiurim, I think, as I would like to applaud Rabbi Tendler before, the same idea. You know that someone who goes to a particular kind of shiur, a particular kind of chesed event, not only are you meeting someone of the gender you're looking for, but you're meeting someone who shares your values. That's why they came to this event. You know, there are too many Jews your age who are meeting in bars. All right, maybe they're not in your religious persuasion, but. But I don't say this with tongue in cheek, but you know, the Gemara says you can tell a person with kaso, kiso, and koso. Right? You can tell a person how they get when they're angry, when something confronts them that angers them, or how they spend their money, or how they are when they drink. I would like to say you can really see a person by how they play a board game. Seriously. Play Trivial Pursuit with someone, or something, I don't know, play a Boulder Dash. You can really see someone, how they are intellectually even sometimes, and you can see how they react to adversity. I don't know, but seriously, it doesn't have to be a board game, many different things. It's just that we never have the opportunity to see a real person. They're on a fahair, that's all you're doing. You might as well ask them questions in Choshen Mishpat. you're just testing each other. You're not on your real genuine behavior. And very often, one of the problems I said in one of the earlier of my commandments here is that you never get around to the second or third date because, you know, the hotel lobby was the first date, second date maybe an airport, third date is maybe ESPN zone, maybe, so that's number seven. Number eight is try to figure in Meseches Kiddushin between Daf Mem Ches and Daf Nun. There are all these conditions about marriage. Harei et mekudeshes li amanas she'ani tzadik, amanas she'ani gibor, amanas she'ani osher, amanas she'ani rosho, amanas she'ani this and that. What is that? Has anyone in this room ever contemplated actually giving a ring to a woman and saying these things? You know what I'm saying? What are these things coming about? Because at the time of the Gemara, there was very little time for courting. You didn't come up with these things until it was B'shas Maisa. So you had to actually build into the Kiddushin these certain tanayim. Today we determine these things, obviously, through dating and courting. I think Rabbi Temple covered most of this. If I would write down here the things that parents, hundreds of them over the years, have called me to ask, and woefully, I don't get the questions, is this person a mensch? Do they speak Lashon Hara? Instead, I hear, who's their posek? Who is my son-in-law going to call when he has a shayla? Right? Instead, I hear, what kind of tablecloth? I'm not kidding you. What kind of tablecloth does her mother tend to get overweight? What? What? It says in the Torah, a man can't marry a girl and her mother. What are you talking about? I sometimes get on the nerves because I get so crazy with their questions. Anyway, I figured they're going to be calling me back in 5 years with some of the same questions. So, but seriously, the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos says that every Jew has Rachmanus, they have Baishamus, and they have Gemilus Chasadim. If you limit the three questions to that, your daughter-in-law will have someone else to talk a Choshen Mishpat and a Shagis Aryeh. They're asking, can he touch up a good Shagis Aryeh? Can I have a good halachic discussion with him? I said, listen, your daughter's a big girl. She can find that out. She'll find that out. But these, you're asking all the wrong questions. Is he going to be a mensch to her? Is he going to be kind to her? That's number eight. Number nine, take time for tachlis. I say this every day, and Rabbi Tender also talked about this. Especially at weddings, my goodness, you're dressed your best. You look your best at a wedding, but you never see him because you're on two sides of the room. You're eating it half a mile apart, and you never see each other. Here's really a chance to sit and say, who's that? And ask your friend, who's that? And walk home with a couple of phone numbers or something, and it's an excellent opportunity. Not only that, but to stand maybe, you can look from far and see what goes on a Friday night. I remember a few years ago, it was 5 degrees outside. It was Friday night after Asara B'Teves. And I made a bet with one of my balabatim, at least tonight they'll go home right after shul. They're in front of the shul for an hour and a half. People want the opportunities to talk, to sit around and say a few words and ask a friend who's that, and it works. Finally, be easygoing. Be what the Gemara calls the best possible way to make a relationship work is to be ma'avir al hamidos. It's the most important thing. I just came from a meeting with an engaged couple who are close to chas v'shalom to breaking up because there's a difficulty in family members being ma'avir al hamidos. I think I patched it up. I'm sorry, that's why I was a little late here. But be a good conversationalist, be a good listener. The Gemara says that when love is great between husband and wife, they can live together on the sharp side of a sword. Now, obviously, one person can't reside on such a place. How can two? The answer is that if love is great and you have true, genuine concern about the other, you only take up room insofar as how that pleases the other person. If a person can see genuine goodness and a nice, kind person, that a person can be ma'avir al hamidos, I really want to do this, but I'll do that because that's what I know you want to do. Obviously, you can't build a whole marriage on doing that every time. But with good common sense, each one will see that this emerges, and will see that people will all many differences will melt between them. Now, this is often an issue that it makes this last one a little difficult, is that people obviously come from different backgrounds. You have one person comes from a background where the parents always went for a loving walk outside after dinner, and they held hands, and they never had a harsh word between them. And the other spouse's his parents never said a kind word to each other. So they love each other very much, but they don't have exactly the same way of expressing that. So she thinks that he doesn't love her because he doesn't talk to her the way she saw her parents talk. That's why it's important to have a little counseling before marriage. There are some states in the United States that will not let you get a marriage license unless you've taken one or two classes with a family therapist. And I think Chassan Kala classes all over the city have one or two sessions. As we do, we have two, and then a third session with a financial planner. How do you like that? Because that's an important thing too. She comes from a family where money was spent easily. He comes from a family with, and you know, after 21 years of marriage, I'm just as different from my wife about how we raise our children as we were 21 years ago. She is an only child, and I come from a large family. So can I know her? Now we have a large family. So I know much better than she does about how to raise a large family, right? So how to do homework, how to put kids to bed, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? When you love each other and you understand what those backgrounds are and how they're different, you try to work things through, and you try to be, as the number 10 was, Ma'avir al-Hamidos. So these are my 10 commandments. Maybe I'll just read them quickly to you later, but for now, this is my presentation. I want to thank Hananya for arranging this. It's an excellent idea. We should do this, things like this more often, and have just more and more excuses to meet like this. Shkayach.
So now we'll take questions for Rabbi Schwartz. First question in the back over there.
Don't really have a question. I'm Hananya's father, but I have two.
Oh, whose father? I'm sorry.
I'm Hananya's father. I don't have any questions.
is my daughter in the room, by the way?
I do have two more tips that I'd like to give, which weren't given tonight. One, when groups meet, especially at a chasana, you find all the girls sitting in one group, and the boy can't go over to break up the group, and they lose an opportunity to meet. So therefore, I advise the girls to spread out a little bit, give the boys a chance to give the boy a chance to go over to one girl, not to a whole group. Secondly, when someone is fortunate enough to find a basharita and get married or get engaged, they seem to lose all their friends and forget about them. That's a wonderful opportunity. If a girl becomes a kala, her chasen has many friends. Why not ask your chasen to introduce those friends to your friends? And the other way around too. Why doesn't the chasen ask the girl to introduce the boys to her friends? That's two more tips that I have for tonight.
Okay, we have the 12 commandments this evening. Thank you.
This is a question for either Rabbi Tenth or Rabbi Schwartz. It seems to me, from my own experience, that a good thing to look for in a prospective mate is how the person relates to his or her parents. The notion of kibud av v'em, and that hasn't been mentioned yet. Is that something important for this particular thing?
Well, I think we received applause before when I mentioned why the people were asking about if the mother tends to become overweight. That's ridiculous. But one thing is very clear. It will surface in how a man will treat his wife, or possibly his children as well, by how he treats his parents. It's actually, if you want to look at the parish of Abarbanel, to cut the words Kabedes Avicha Vesimecha, he has quite a long commentary about this, about how the relationship between parents goes in a direction of spouses as well as children. So it's the Torah's way. The Torah, in its infinite knowledge, knows that we start off in this direction. A child sees a healthy relationship with parents. That will translate to husband and wife. If you have a chance, the Barbanel has never been translated, but Barbanel to Perek Chof and Sefer Shmos discusses this, and you're absolutely right about it. It should be that I think is a legitimate question. Have you observed this person and how he or she relates to the parents? I think that's much more relevant, then how much does the mother-in-law weigh?
Regrettably, there's little opportunity in the dating scene today. It's not like it once was, where you dated the girl next door only, in a little community where you know how families live. Certainly, how parents relate to each other is also very significant, because that's where children learn how to relate to their husband and wife. Unfortunately, that would be a wonderful, wonderful bit of information for a person to have. I say, in practice, it's not available. Kibbutz Av Va'em, however, does come into the picture usually when the parents object to the shidduch. And that is an interesting halachic ruling. The parents have no right to object to a shidduch unless they can claim that the shidduch embarrasses me. Then Kibbutz Av Va'em comes in. The boy's father is in prison. The father has a right to say, it's such a mechutin I don't want. And then Kibbutz Av comes in as a halacha d'oraisa that you have to listen to your father even in shidduchim. But if the father says, I don't think she's pretty enough, you don't have to listen to her father. One of my sons came back from a date and said to my father-in-law, I'm very much impressed with the girl, but I don't think she's very pretty. Which my father answered, you're picking a wife, not an esrog.
Incidentally, if I may mention one other makor, the Sforno on the pasuk, it's Al Kenya Azov Ish Es Oviv Ve Esimo Ve Davak Be Ishto. He gives advice to parents as best you can. Again, Rabbi Tendler gave you a bit of a parameter just now. Stay out of the business, unless it's something that's. I mean, parents will always say, "Well, this is a big thing." Have your head on your shoulders over what's a big thing and what's not. Don't sweat the small stuff.
I have a question for either. I know we've been living in this community for a while, and we've met a lot of the boys who are learning in the yeshiva, learning for smicha, and a lot of them aren't ready. They're not ready. They want to learn more. They're not ready. 24, 25, they're not ready. And maybe 25, they'd get ready. They're last year in smicha. And I wanted to know if you had anything to say. I know the society has changed, and I know that people may want to wait, but I wanted to know if you had anything to say to boys learning in yeshiva. They're saying, I want to spend more time learning Torah. I know when I get married, I won't be able to learn as well. What do you say to them about when they should be ready, or how they can help figure out when they're ready? Because I think one of the problems is when boys wait for that long, it's harder for the girls to find boys.
There are Gemaras that refer to this as well, about the ages. The younger, of course, the more likely we are to be poking the satan in the eye. And you know, everyone has to know their own threshold. I think if I may put the shoe on the other foot, the boy may feel, listen, I'm just incapable of supporting someone right now. As long as we put out into the community that, hey, listen, you can have that basement apartment on Cannon Street, and that'll satisfy the two of you now. You'll grow up and you'll build into a different situation. But if we can put out into the community that's perfectly okay to start out that way, right? The morning after my wedding, well, it was my first day in the Rav's Shir. I took off the week though, but I started smicha the next morning. So because I did, there was no expectation that we had to have, you know, everything right away. So if guys feel that I can't because I can't put food on the table, then they will wait until, and that, I'm sorry to say that wait may just keep going on and on. But the halacha said a certain age. By 24, the yeshivas should start kicking them in the pants, right?
Maybe directed more to parents, but to children too. We are influenced by American society. American society has this Wild West idea that You're independent, you're on your own. As soon as you get married, of course, your financial responsibilities are your own. That's not the Jewish way. Never was and should not be. I'll put it to you very bluntly. If parents would make the simple calculation that if my son didn't get married this year, I'd have to support him for another year, and a beach set of parents would continue the support of their child for the next 2-3 years while the couple finds a financial base, then people could get married younger. But the boys and girls don't want it because it's not the American way. But it is the Jewish way, and it should be that way.
Hi, Rabbi Schwartz. How are you doing? Hi. Okay. Your advice that if you're at a wedding or on 95th Street, just, you know, go for broke. Ask for the phone number. Introduce yourself. Have someone else introduce you. Go for it. Don't be afraid. We're hearing this. A good thing. However, in my experience, there's a much bigger taboo on women to make the first move. In other words, a man has that ability to take the situation a little bit under his own control and say, I see her, I like her, I'm going to go up and talk to her, ask for a phone number, whatever. But women are often stuck in a situation where they either don't feel they can do anything about it, or because they're waiting for the man to make the first move, or they make the first move like through a friend and make it sound like it was the friend's idea, because God forbid the guy should know it was really her idea and she really wants it. It has to sound like really the friend has the idea. Or, and unfortunately I'm speaking from many years of my own experience, if a woman does make the first move, either the man says, oh no, she's aggressive, run away, run away. Or, wow, I'm really flattered. That's kind of cool that she's interested in me. Let's go out on a date. And then after the first date, it's, well, anyone who wants me can't be that great, so run away, run away. So should women make the first move if they want to? How aggressive is it smart to be if the men are just going to run away anyway? I mean, should the men just say, hey, if a woman is interested, don't run away?
Okay. Is this answer for the record, or is it? Are you right? Are you reporting?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm on spec.
Okay. I think that the Gemara also says about this that Adam lost his rib. He has to go out and find it now. To my consternation, as I have two daughters in the shidduch scene now, and what I hear from all the people involved is it's a boy's world out there. They're the ones who call the shots, and I'm very my consternation is the same as yours on this effect, because I'm nogei b'davar now. However, I think that even everything you describe here can be dealt with in a way that no one ever knows. I mean, you can come up to me and say, you know that guy? You know his name? I'd like you to approach him and say something. He says, you know, I think that this is a great idea. As long as the person you're talking to can be reasonable with you and give you a realistic response and say, yeah, I think it's a good idea. I didn't think of it myself. I'm sorry, but now that you mention it, it's a good idea. I'll talk to him. And then I don't think it's gnevus das for the rabbi to go over to the man and say, I think that this is a good idea. What do you think about such and such a person? I can get her number. Now you get the best of all worlds. You get the guy. He gets to feel flattered. He without thinking that you've been untoward and or too forward, and I think that you get what you want. Do you agree with this? I think in the world today, I think we are touched with a situation bordering on Hora'as Shah, I believe. I understand that Chazal were worried about Ein Apotropos La'arayos, and that if you put too many people together in the same room, you run into all sorts of problems and worries over what may happen. But even in our community, I mean, I don't know which, whatever high school you went to, but there ought to be something in between the licentiousness we know is out there and some of the stuff that's probably reactionary to that, all the way on the other side, where young people in their early 20s, early to mid-20s, can learn certain social skills and learn how to talk to each other without having these worries that you're referring to. So I should hope that there are vehicles where a woman can also make that move, perhaps with an intermediary, and get what she wants without all of the fears you face. I want to make sure you're satisfied with that. Okay.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schwartz. Thank you very much, Rabbi Tendler. I'd like to now call upon Ms. Sandra Gross, a professional Shadchan, who can give us her take on things.
First of all, I'd like to thank Hananya for giving me the opportunity to come here. And I just would like to say that there really is, I've noticed over the years, over the past like 5 or 6 years, since my oldest child started Stern College, which was in the early 90s, until now when I have a son who's in the Smicha program, that there definitely is, I see, a tremendous problem in how young, intelligent, good-looking, vibrant, talented, Orthodox people can meet other young, vibrant, talented, attractive, Orthodox people. And I think there is an answer. Because in business, when you have a problem, you look at a business model that helps you solve the problem. I want to tell you something. 30 years ago, there were also young, intelligent, very bright, Orthodox young men and women who wanted to meet. And we came to Stern College and Yeshiva University. And there was an unbelievably vibrant Jewish community. And we had a commingling of the people from Stern and YU almost every night. Every activity that could possibly be together with the boys from the young men from YU and the young women from Stern, every opportunity was seized and grabbed, and we made the most of it. So there were co-ed chagigas for every yontiv. There were lectures all the time. And whatever you can think of, there was debating teams, there was so much going on. We did not have a van in those days. You had to take the train. It was dirty, filthy, there were muggers, but we got on that train, and on Thursday night, the boys came downtown. I keep on calling them boys because I'm older, okay? I remember Joe Franklin. I remember him very well. But I want to tell you, it worked. And when I went to my 10th year Stern College reunion, most of us were married. And I have to tell you, we were pretty happily married, or at least we pretended we were to our other friends. And we had children. And the bottom line is, we were, most of us, if we showed up at the reunion, we were still religious. And we raised children who are now in Stern and YU and are having this absurd problem. And the problem could be stopped right here. I think it is time, and I'll say this for Hananya, you can stop them. You can end this madness. You have the Rosh Hashiva, who was in charge when I was in Stern, was none other than the Rav. I mean, you could take that where you want to, but the bottom line is, we did everything that was done in the sense of Torah and Mada, with Torah being at the forefront of everything. I think it is time for those of you who go to this institution to really ask that the administration, wherever the powers might be, to make more co-educational or co-mingling activities. And if you would all come to these things and show that there's a groundswell of support for this, then I do think the institution is flexible enough that it would succeed. And that element of chance, let me tell you, I try to fix people up.
it basically does not work. I have a horrendous track record, and I will stand here and tell you that. And I'll tell you why. Because there's an element of chance in life. It is bashert. But that element of chance, if you don't have... of opportunity, and you have to seize it. And I'll tell you another thing. Do not look for the para aduma. It's not showing up. But you want a nice person, and you want to meet a person in the type of atmosphere where it will be conducive to you seeing, is that person someone that you might possibly like to go out with? Is there something there that can click? And you don't have to do it under the artificial meeting of a blind date where everybody gave their list. I want this and I want that, and is he moving to Israel, and is he doing this and is he doing that? Who knows? But if you do know that there's something there, a little spark that maybe, gee, that person's interesting, I'd like to meet him. I say him because obviously, you know, that's how I think. I'd like to meet him. I would like to go out with him perhaps. And that's why something where there isn't the pressure, you can just come and relax and sort of be yourself. It is a good way to sort of see, is there potential, is there something there with the other person that perhaps I can go out with him, perhaps I can have a good time. And you know something, even if I don't marry him, perhaps there's something in that person that I can now incorporate into me that makes me a better person. So when I do meet the next person, I'm on another level and I have something else to give. I really think that it's up to you. You don't have to be victimized by the system. The system's tough. I really know that. But you have to be proactive. And you have to really, wherever there is an opportunity within the halachic framework that you could try to meet, you have to demand it nicely from the institutions that you go to, and you also have to make the most of them when you have that. For example, people have brought up weddings. It is not right for there to be separate seating at a wedding where there are single people. It's just not right. But I mean, that is just my personal opinion. But it is a perfect way. And the chas and kala, I mean it. They should be thankful on that day that God was kind to them and they got their basher, and they should spread the wealth. Try to make other people happy. It is in your power to do this. You're the future, and this is your time. And seize it, and that's all I have to say to you guys. Go for it.
So now we'll take questions for Ms. Gross. First question, Chanya is in the back.
I just wanted to ask how you feel about dating more than one person at a time.
I think it is wonderful. And I'll tell you why. You're in college now. You're young adults. I guarantee you, you don't just take one subject a semester, right? You take what? In STARM,
no,
I remember.
What? This is different. I feel that somebody should be able to have their hearts open and available to the person that they're going out with. And there should be an understanding that they're the only person that they're going out with at the time. After all, we are prospective marriage partners, so it would be nice to know that the other person...
I mean, I understand what you're saying in theory, and I think it's really laudable that you're so, you know, nice like that, but I truthfully don't think at this point... I have to tell you, I think that a person... in the dating scene, I think you really can go out. I'm not saying go out with seven people at one time, but I think this, what's happened is that you're going out with somebody, and then somebody says to you, oh, I have a friend that I want to introduce you to. But you say, but I can't go out with him now. I can't meet him because I have to concentrate totally on this one person.
Yes, I think that's right. I think going out with more than one person at a time makes dating cavalier and it makes it too casual. And that's what causes people to be single for a longer time if they think that they can just go around and date lots of people at a time.
I think if it works for you, then really that's what you have to go with. But I think as a rule, you start wasting too much time. But I think
dating more than one person at a time is wasting time. Because it just makes you confused.
It's just been a difference of how we see it. I mean, that's just a difference of opinion. Yeah, but Rabbi Schwartz, maybe you could say something about that. I'm more definitive.
Well, maybe we can find a pshara. I'm not sure if someone is opening up their hearts maybe the very first time they're meeting. Maybe after the second or third date, maybe that should be... Well, one thing is clear. There should be an understanding on both sides. If one side feels that you're seeing me exclusively and the other side does not have that same sentiment, that's a problem. Because one side is being deceived or led astray. So in this day, and there might be a pshara here, maybe by the second or third date, you can already start to say, listen, I feel very strongly about you, and this idea about going through the shadchan to say yes or no, I agree with Rabbi Tendler very wholeheartedly. I've set up people in their 30s who are so afraid of rejection that they have to tell me, I really want to go out with her again. Can you ask her if she would say yes? I mean, ad kidei kach, and you know what? If it's better for them to hear the rejection from me, I'm willing to make those calls all the time. But we have to have a situation where we can face this music ourselves. But anyway, to answer your question, I think that there should certainly be an understanding on both sides, and maybe there can be maybe some kind of pshara at some point. Obviously, you have to say I'm not dating four people at the same time. When does that happen? The day before the engagement? Anyway, the question I raised before about Shema Yakti Menu Acher, lest someone else step in before you, I hope by the time you ask someone to marry you, you know what they're going to say. So too, by the time, when you're dating seriously with someone, hopefully they feel the same way and you can actually share those words explicitly so that there's no misunderstanding. Each one should feel the same way.
Hi. Yeah. I graduated from Stern a year and a half ago. And when I was in Stern, there was the student council president when I was a senior. He made all these fun events that were really fun. And it was a good opportunity to meet people. And I used to go to them, and I had a great time. And people would make fun of them. Like, people would laugh at people who would go, not mean, not like that, but like people would make fun of it, you know, all the time. And I used to go and I used to have a good time, but it was so unfortunate that so few people went to that.
You know, I tell you, that's what really, no, all kidding aside, that bothers me terribly, because I notice that there seems to be terrible, I mean, I have children your age, and I notice that there seems to be, I don't know how this happened, and this is what really got me so upset, is that there seems to be some kind of stigma about people who tend to try to meet in more relaxed, informal atmospheres. And that it was, I mean, some of the feedback I would get is, she went to that, or he goes to that, he's not a serious person, or, I mean, that's fun. Having fun became, which is a normal part of human existence, and hopefully you'll have fun your whole life. And I don't think there's anything, I mean, fun within, you know, the framework of your life as an Orthodox Jew, there's nothing sinful. I mean, we're not living in Puritan Salem, Massachusetts. But I've noticed that. I don't know what to tell you. I think there has to be other like-minded people like you, and that's why when these events do happen, people who feel that way have to come out. They can't allow... You see, that's the other thing. You come to college, you are... Hopefully, you are... You know, you're here also for your intellectual growth, as corny as that may sound. And you're individuals with minds that God gave you to think clearly. And you have to also have a sense of self. These are the years when you develop it. And this is... You have to say... I know in my heart that as a, you know, a halachically seeking Jew, somebody who's always trying to grow halachically, because that's what we are, that this, I know, though, feels right for me, and I could do it, and you have to have courage. Look, I'm going to tell you something. Everybody always says about, you know, splitting the Red Sea, making a shidduch is like splitting the Red Sea. To my mind, you know what it's like? It was Nachshon ben Aminadav, and that's the single person. And what happens is, Nachshon got to the sea. He looked back. He couldn't go because there were the Egyptians. And he looks forward, and there's all this horrible water, and it was scary. And Nachshon, but he decided in the end, he said, look, I have faith in God, and I have faith in myself that I'm competent. And he stepped into the water, and according to the Medrash, it didn't part right away. But Nachshon stepped in, he took the leap of faith, so to speak, and the waters parted for him. And, you know, he proved himself, and I think that's what it is. It's very hard to go to these things. You're vulnerable, you're putting your ego on the line. I know, especially speaking as a woman, you become very vulnerable at these things. It's much easier to call a shotgun and say, I want this, this, and this, match me up with this, this, and that, and then when it doesn't work out, tell the shotgun to do basically your dirty work for them. But that's not living. And you know something, in the end of the day, you're shortchanging yourself. And as hard as that is, it's really the truth, I promise you.
I have a second question.
Yeah, sure, why not?
My mom is always trying to set me up with people.
Good for her. My mama did it to me all the time.
My question is, she would call up someone and say, oh, I know this guy and my daughter might match, can you set them up? And they would say, oh, he's wrong for her. So what do you say to someone who says, oh, I know she's wrong for him, I know he's wrong for her?
Well, as you notice, I have strong opinions. I think that's horrible. I think, and I want to tell you, it's not just it happens to your mother. I don't think, it's not horrible, I take that back, but it's not fair. It's not fair. And I think we really have to be very careful. I know it's not just, it's a lot of times, like a friend, I'll hear, like somebody will say to a friend, oh, I want to fix so-and-so up, and they'll say, oh, that's all wrong. You have no right as another human being to do that. You are not, you, how could you possibly know so much that you know that A isn't for B? It's not fair, and I really think people should really watch it before they say that, unless they know something so horrific about that other person, like he's a, like an axe murderer, then I say, okay, you could say it, but barring that, no. No, you sound like a very good person, actually.
Hello, over here.
Yes.
Hi. First of all, like, thank y'all to everybody who came into this because it was awesome.
Well, thank you all for coming. Yeah.
So, a couple little things. First of all, when you have these ideal weddings with mixed seating, where are you going to do the dancing? You were talking about the thing about the events that people don't go to when we don't have enough co-ed events and that kind of thing. You mentioned within a halachic framework. Now, this is just like an insight from little me, but I've noticed that things don't always work out in a halachic framework. The people who go to the events are not always people who are ready to get married and who are looking to get married. I remember once I was on an uptown van going down Amsterdam Avenue, and there was a drug deal going on in the back. And, like, really scary stuff happens. And it's, like, it's definitely not halachic. It's not, you know, the way a Jewish people should be acting.
I don't know. We went on the subway in my day, and there was so much going on there. Who knew?
So I'm saying, like, I feel like maybe that's part of the reason. I don't know. I'm, like, not in the administration, but maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. And also why people's reluctance to go, because they see these things for what they often are, which is, more, I mean, you'll forgive me, hooking up than looking to get married. The end.
You see, again, I'm not qualified to answer on something like that, so I wouldn't even try to. I just know one thing, that part of meeting somebody to get married, to my mind, is socializing and acquiring the necessary social skills, and also through the process of dating, you more define that which is somebody that you should marry. And that's why, you know, many people they say, okay, I'm not ready, now I'm ready, and then they meet somebody and then they get married. And maybe that works for them. But the bottom line is that if you take a few years to, you know, if the process evolves a little bit, I'm not saying it's supposed to take 40 years, but there is, you know, a period of time that you can allow yourself that you can mature and get to know what you need, and by the same token, on the way to doing that, find somebody who you realize will, you could grow with and have a happy marriage with. Remember, marriage isn't the end of the game. If there is a life after marriage, and hopefully you're both continuing to grow and you're, you know, going to develop, continue to develop as a human being in, you know, in tandem with your mate.
I'd like to thank our panelists, Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Schwartz, and Ms. Gross. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Specifically, I'd also like to thank the organizers of this event, Zion Oren and Hananya Weissman. Also, for those of you interested, audio will be available on yustudents.org, hopefully within the next day or so, probably also on sheer.net. There are pastries on the side where people can get something to eat if they're hungry, and there are plenty more of kosher student council events that are upcoming in the next few weeks, and I can guarantee you personally that they are drug-free. Thank you very much.